Chapter 2, Marxism, the Failed Promise. Perhaps, with the collapse of Marxism in the late 20th century, it would be wise to let the dead bury their dead. But Marxist thought cannot be dismissed so easily, even in defeat. Too many bloody battles were fought in the name of the working classes by Marxists. Too much effort was spent trying to defeat these movements. In the end, none of it much mattered. For many, Marxism was the only alternative to capitalism. For those concerned with the plight of the working classes, there is a feeling of hopelessness that the problems of capitalist excess will now go unchecked. Fortunately, capitalism has as many variants as countries which claim to practice it, many quite enlightened. As Hazel Henderson points out in her Politics of the Solar Age, capitalism and Marxism were merely peripheral arguments over how industrialism should be organized. Marxism may have lost the arguments, but the contradictions of industrialism remain. Examining why Marxist ideas ultimately lost sheds considerable light on which of the remaining industrial forms should ultimately prevail. Marx identified the predatory nature of the capitalism of his day and the resulting plight of the producers. His biggest analytical error was his failure to account for stratification within producer ranks. His description of factory life are like the description of warfare from the point of view of a foot soldier. Life at the bottom has always been miserable, no matter what the job at hand. He never describes the working characteristics of the people who design the factories. In his defense, it would have been nearly impossible for him to do so because when he was writing, those persons formed a group so small as to be nearly invisible. It never occurred to him that the artisans thrown out of work in the agriculture and crafts would respond by creating an industrial explosion. When he wrote his Communist Manifesto in 1848, the experiments that would lead to the chemical industry were almost a decade off. There were no aluminum, petroleum, automobile, railroad, self-propelled farm machinery, electronics, or pharmaceutical industries either. Each of these industries has developed different characteristics based largely on task. Marx's description of capitalism is a description of mining, the textile industries, and other primitive industry. His descriptions of these industries barely need updating even today. But it is a serious mistake to think that these industries are the models of all industry. Marx himself was not a producer in the traditional sense of the word. Certainly he produced writings, but he built nothing, grew no food, nor wove any cloth. This distinction may have led to the fatal flaw in his reasoning. He recommended violent revolutions. Producer revolution may be an oxymoron. To be a successful revolutionary, one must first be a successful militarist. To be a militarist, one must abandon, at least temporarily, the life of a producer and become a destroyer. Once the revolutionary decision that killing another human being for political reasons has been justified, the struggle enters a phase where producers have little to gain and much to lose. 1. Declaring war on the predators plays right into their hands. The predators are professionals at combat. It is what they do best. Moreover, whatever restraint a predator may show in times of peace is eliminated in time of war. 2. The persons most likely to head a revolution are the same persons who have the strongest military mindset. Although the foot soldiers of a revolution can go home to their work when it is over, Those who stay behind to govern believe in militarism as thoroughly as those they overthrew. They have become predators, even if they were not to begin with. 3. Winning revolutionaries tend to kill the wrong people. Because excellence is a form of deviance, the producers most needed to build a successful society stand out, draw attention to themselves, and then become targets. 4. Revolutions breed counter-revolutions. This can keep the predator militarists in power for decades. This pretty well sums up the problems of Leninist, Stalinist Soviet Union. The revolutionaries and those who repulsed the counter-revolutions, including World War II, were military men who confused building a country with running an army. This does not mean all Marxist thinking was flawed. Marx believed that societies advanced from feudalism to capitalism to socialism to communism. A century later, we can see that Marx's predictions of the nature of this progression may have been correct. What Marx failed to realize was that a building industrial society would probably contain all four variations of social organizations simultaneously. Moreover, some enterprises would stay at one level, perhaps permanently, while others would advance to the communist stage very rapidly. Marx confused the growth of industrialization with historical determinism. He correctly noted that as enterprise grew in size, the social organizations necessary to operate enterprise became more collective. 150 years of industrialization have taught that not all enterprise can or should become large. Marxism failed over this misunderstanding. In the old Soviet Union, all problem solving, small or large, would follow a strict format that assumed collective decision making was always superior. In fact, it is not. Though often not pretty, the Soviet Union successfully organized and executed huge, mind-numbing mass movements of people and forced large-scale industrialization, the defeat of Germany's best-equipped armies, and the building of transportation links that covered 11 time zones. Large projects did not doom Marxism. Small enterprise was the problem. Eliminate the excesses of feudalism, and it serves the organizational needs of agriculture well. Organized as it has been throughout most of the 20th century, regulated capitalism serves the organizational needs of small and medium-sized producers. As projects grow larger, they become more socialist in organization. Publicly held corporations coexist quite gracefully with the socialist governments of Western Europe. Examples of all four social organizations can be found in some mutant form in the United States. Owner-operated family farms combined with cooperatives form an interesting enlightened feudalism-socialism combination. Capitalism is still widely practiced and is particularly effective at bringing new products to market. Larger social projects that require greater collective action pose difficult questions for a society dedicated to individualism, as in the United States. The lack of a socialized perspective means delivery of medical care is absurd. Education has become a disaster area. Large projects that form natural monopolies must be regulated. From the standpoint of social organization, publicly owned industries and regulated industrial monopolies are similar. Though there are many industries that would benefit from a more collective form of ownership, ideology prevents Americans from putting the necessary energy and funds into effective collective action. When it comes to industrial cooperation, the keystone of industrial dominance, Americans chanted central planning is impossible like a mantra, while the Japanese embraced the needs of central planning and made that work as well. The ideological battles that accompanied the Cold War distorted Marxist ideas on both sides. The old Soviet Union, which believed that feudalism and capitalism could not be anything but evil, was systematically deprived of the advantages of family farm cooperative agriculture and the innovativeness of industrial capitalism. The United States, believing that communism is evil, has been deprived of the possibilities for collective action while making competitive even that which is not, such as the national telephone system. There even seems a sociology at work in what organization best suits each enterprise. People who grow things tend to be very traditional and family-oriented. Producer capitalists tend to be dissatisfied innovators. Socialists tend to be caring humanists who make wonderful teachers and healthcare workers. Communal projects such as power plants are best run by the most boring, bureaucratic, by-the-book person a society can produce. People may be predisposed by personality type towards each kind of organization. If this is true, the best-run society will have a slot for each type of person. With all four social organizations in a given society, one merely embeds an enterprise in the appropriate type of organization, and if things are not working well, moves it to one that works better. Let the farmers own the land they farm. Let chefs run their cafes. Let curious experimenters and innovators guide the direction of industrial enterprise. Only keep them out of places like Chernobyl, which, as the world found out, is not the sort of place for unauthorized experiments by dissatisfied industrial types. If all four forms of social organization exist within a given country, then the debate shifts from which system provides all the answers to which system is best for a certain application. If people are more or less free to choose which form of social organization best suits them, the abuses that have plagued each type might be eliminated. How abusive can capitalism be if there is a socialist alternative? How stifling can communism be if there is a capitalist alternative? The only possible losers in such a setup are the ideologues. Not all Marx's predictions were prescient. Marx did not see, nor could he have seen, how industry would shift from exploitation of human to the exploitation of the biosphere. It is estimated that each person in North America uses the energy of 1,000 slaves in the form of fossil energy. These mechanical slaves make the lives of the modern working class better than the lives of the nobility 300 years ago. Marx confused finance with industry. The role money plays in setting the industrial rules was understated. He concentrated his criticisms on the industrialists and almost ignored the financiers. Financiers may look and occasionally act like industrialists, but in truth, the two are the soul of conflict. In large corporations today, the battle is waged between accounting and engineering. Those who win these battles determine the corporate face. Marx called for ownership by the producing classes and, in many respects, companies owned or operated by engineers and scientists are the fulfillment of his prescription, and are much better companies for which to work. In this respect, Marx was correct, though this was not what he had in mind. Marx thought that widespread worker participation in management decisions would foster a better industrial state. Sometimes, as with the modern quality circles, this is clearly proven to be true. But because Marx failed to understand the importance of producer elites, he was unable to grasp the importance of industrial leadership and vision. Designed by a committee is a worthy form of slander, because in some critical matters of production, individual genius counts for something, and there may be no such thing as collective genius. Marx postulated that labor is the basis of value, but ignored the fact that all labor, even if equally strenuous, does not lead to the same value. He thought that a capitalist is a person who owns the means of production, and the workers should seize those means for their own good. As thousands of mine, factory, and farm owners throughout the industrial world can attest, merely owning the means of production means very, very little when the financiers decide that the industrial economy should come to a stop in an effort to defend the value of money. Because of the profound changes in the nature of the industrial state since the time of Marx, his ideas from the modern perspective are not significantly different from those of any other member of the predator class. This is one reason that farmers and other members of the skilled occupations were seldom Marxists. An interesting comment to emerge from the Solidarity trade movement in Poland was a remark that capitalism is the exploitation of man by man. Marxism is simply the reverse. Because Marx so significantly misunderstood the possibilities of the producing classes, his ideas have become more like religious teachings. Moreover, a significant number of those who called themselves Marxists treated his work religiously. Marxism failed because it could not organize work effectively, not for a lack of lofty goals. The collapse of Marxism may have marked the final irrelevance of neo-religious, environmentally insane, and technologically absurd social movements. Industrial problems are industrial problems, and hewing to a Marxist ideology changes this little, as the world found out at Chernobyl when a failed communist nuclear reactor did as much damage as any capitalist reactor would have done had it failed. Although it is true that the quality of industrial output reflects the quality of social arrangements, there is precious little evidence to show that Marxism in theory or in practice leads to a sophisticated form of industrial activity with less environmental damage. There is evidence that shows the reverse. When it comes to the most pressing problems of the 20th century, Marx has little to offer because most are creations of the producer elites, people he did not even acknowledge. It is strange that there is much argument over minor conflicts, but sadly, most warfare in history has been between predator groups with trivial differences in ideology. That, of course, is the legacy of Marxist revolutions, because Marx taught that class warfare would occur between the powerful and the powerless, and failed to make clear distinctions between the different members of the producing classes, the Marxist revolutionaries were no more members of the producing classes than the rulers they replaced. As a result, a Marxist revolution meant only a rearrangement of the relationships in the 100 classes. From a producer point of view, there is no difference between a farm run by a landlord who lives in Paris and a planning committee in Moscow. In either case, the wrong people are making production decisions.